men probably realize how rough their lyrics can be and how problematic their life can be, right, with the lyrics that they share, right, in comparison to women artists who, when they write their lyrics, to them it's like, oh, I'm empowering us and the girls. Like, it's a different take on femininity. It's a different take on sexuality. It's a different take on music, right? Because it's a completely different view, right? And I don't think they feel any source of guilt or shame, because they know that what they're doing is for empowerment.
Hey, this is Epicenter NYC. We connect our communities to news, information, and each other. I'm your host, Amber Castillo. In December, reggaeton legend Daddy Yankee announced his plan to dedicate himself to Christianity. He dropped the bombshell on a farewell tour while a drone depicted a giant cross and the message, Christ is coming. A reggaeton celebrity retiring for faith isn't new. Daddy Yankee's move follows other icons like Farruko, Julio Voltio, El General. But that's not the only thing they have in common. So why do reggaeton artists who've announced their devotion to religion happen to be middle-aged men? Today, you'll hear from historians, theologians, and experts of the Puerto Rican experience as we answer this question. Chloe Gentil Reyes is a faculty fellow in New York University's music department. Reggaeton was a formative part of her girlhood that, in hindsight, forced her to look back and interrogate the scripts she might have been given about being a woman. Now she's reckoning both with this problematic messaging and the experience of finding liberation in reggaeton.
So I grew up like when reggaeton was really coming to the U.S. and like really when I was, I think, 9 was when Daddy Yankee's Gasolina like really hit, you know, the mainstream. And in Miami, it felt like we got it first, you know, like I felt like that proximity growing up to the Caribbean. But most of my family, like my mom's self-proclaimed New Yorican, and my grandma was the one that migrated from Puerto Rico to the U.S. And so a lot of my family was there even while I was growing up in Miami. So like now I really like to explore those migratory patterns and how music, you know, creates that sense of belonging to, you know, maybe what we see as like an ancestral homeland, right?
Is there anything that you see in terms of, you know, because obviously Daddy Yankee hasn't been the first one. There's Farruko and El General and all of these others. Is there something that you see in that, in having, for these male reggaetoneros, because they're all male, the need to make a public announcement of like, you know, I'm giving up on this genre right now, or at least I'm going to dedicate myself to the faith. So kind of that binary. Is there a reason why you think maybe these reggaetoneros feel like they need to make that announcement?
Well, I mean, so much can be said. It's a really interesting topic. I see it through the lens of almost like colonialism and like religious imperialism as well, where a lot of the colonial mission was religious, you know, and was like Christian, was Catholic on the island, still is sort of in a way, like when we think about like the anti-pornography campaign on the island in 2006, right? And like that really being spearheaded by senators who were religious, or like being supported by religious leagues on the island, basically targeting reggaeton and saying reggaeton is pornography, and saying like that, like we need to save women's image and all this stuff, but sort of ignoring that a lot of like Black femmes on the island like found a lot of liberation in like dancing perreo, found, you know, were creating reggaeton. And so it was sort of this still like Catholic colonial pressure and like this idea of like what decency is, what modesty is, and saying like perreo is not that, right? Like reggaeton is not modest, it's not decent, it's not sacred, right? And so for me, like I think a lot of the things that I explore is actually how dancing in such a way is actually like opens me up to spirituality, you know, like connects me to ancestral ways of moving my body that, you know, have been called sexual, you know, and sometimes are explicitly sexual, right? And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? And so, but then at the same time, right, like sometimes are falsely, you know, put under a lens of like, oh, that's sexual, that's hypersexual, right? And so that's sort of important to me, right, is like reclaiming that spirituality that's often taken away through this Catholic, you know, sort of like Euro-Catholic lens on spirituality that's placed on so many, and bomba too, right? Like placed on so many Puerto Rican art forms, especially if they're coming from Black communities. So it's interesting. So the turn, I guess, then to Daddy Yankee, right? And like others then sort of being explicit about Christianity, right? It's interesting to me because I think also like Daddy Yankee came about, you know, became this like global artist, like while the anti-pornography campaign was happening. And, you know, many of his videos were implicated in that discourse, right? Like, this is porn, this is harming women, this is, you know, not, this is not like the image we want for the nation, you know? And so it's interesting to me, like, perhaps that's also why now there's a need to be explicit of like, oh, I'm reggaetonero and I'm religious and I'm spiritual and I'm, you know, which in their case is Catholic or Christian, right? But I think it's like, you know, almost reclaiming like that spirituality has a lot of nuance, that it has, you know, you can be a reggaetonero and also like go to church on Sundays, you know? So it's an interesting thing thinking about that. I hadn't really thought about, you know, that need to go public. And of course, I think like my mind also partially goes to maybe like a virtue signaling thing of like, I, you know, I want to show everyone that I'm a pious man, you know, which is also, you know, that Catholic colonial pressure to like seem a certain way. But at the same time, perhaps is also, you know, speaking back to this idea that reggaeton, you know, is dirty or, you know, devalued in society. So I wonder, but it's interesting that it's men too, right? Like there haven't been as many examples of women sort of taking that turn. I feel that a lot of these colonial pressures are particularly hard on women and femmes, right? And sort of boxing them in into this is how you have to be.
As a woman, as a femme, as all of these identities, I'm wondering if you could speak a little more about whether there were ever, you ever felt that there were any tensions that you were reconciling in loving certain reggaeton songs or certain reggaetoneros, and kind of thinking about what you were saying earlier about interpretation, whether you do think that it's a narrow interpretation that some of these songs where it sounds like women are, you know, for some interpret it as women being objectified or, you know, it being about centered around men's pleasure. You spoke about this conception of this, of it being like liberating to women and focused on women's pleasure. So I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about that, I guess, if you're comfortable with doing so personally and also maybe in work that you've done.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think my dominating feeling around it has ever been the misogyny that I know is present. And I think that's because just from such a young age, I just have these really amazing memories of like dancing in parks after school with my friends, you know, and that was like all girls, you know, like young girls. And so it was such a formative part of like my girlhood. And yet, you know, I do have to look back and also interrogate, right, like the scripts I might have been given, you know, about being a woman and about being a femme. And, you know, I do reckon with, you know, that I do find this sort of pleasure, right, and this liberation in it. And then I also have to realize there are ways that I was socialized that I might not ever fully grasp, right? And it wasn't just reggaeton in the mix. It was all media. It was all family, intergenerational stuff, you know.
That's another point I'm curious about. Do you think that reggaeton is sometimes targeted unfairly, where like, you know, we do have misogyny, like you were just saying, in other mediums and also in other musical genres? So I'm wondering if you think that that's the case, and why do you think that is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the case. And it's one of the main things that really got me invested in this work and also forced me or motivated me to reclaim it, because I was seeing, you know, I also have like a classical music background, and I was seeing a lot of discriminatory dialogue like within that community around pop music, around hip hop, around, you know, saying it's misogynistic, it's this, it's that, yet being in an all white space, right? And also seeing misogyny that was going under the radar and not being called out and seen as this like high art form. Right. And I'm like, well, I grew up with this stuff, you know, like I, you know, see the merit, the artistic value. And that was one of the things that really infuriated me.
Many male reggaeton superstars who retired from the genre see it differently. I spoke to Jorge Juan Rodriguez V, visiting assistant professor of historical studies at the Union Theological Seminary in the city of New York, who said that many are having a reevaluation about life. They often leave at the height of their careers after years of backlash from critics who say they hypersexualize and objectify women in their lyrics and videos.
Yeah, so I grew up in Connecticut, right outside of Hartford. My parents are from Puerto Rico, and I grew up, you know, in an urban, affordable housing community. Music was always there, you know, both the salsa of my parents, but also I quickly was deeply steeped in reggaeton and hip hop, as was the reality for many 90s kids in diaspora who are trying to make meaning in the kind of intersections of that space. And religion was always connected to everything we did. My mom's a Baptist, the American Baptist, so coming from more of a progressive lens. And my dad's family, they're Catholic and Espiritistas. And so those kind of vestiges were always part of the story. And so long story short, I went on, you know, I had different times and different types of churches. I went on to study religion because there was a time where I was in white evangelicalism and some of the things that they were saying didn't make sense to me. So I wanted to study the Bible in order to better understand what it is that they were arguing. I swiftly learned that the Bible is socially conditioned. And so that led me to study social theory. From there, I started realizing, oh, there's actually this whole leftist progressive view of faith, which led me to study liberation theology. But I still wanted to further study religion. So that's how I pursued a PhD in history of religion. And I study the intersections of colonialism, social movements, and religion.
I'm really curious what it was like growing up with parents of different faiths. And also at that time, like you were saying, with a lot of, you know, as was the case with a lot of 90s kids, like reggaeton still having that presence in your life, and whether, yeah, any of that created tensions or something for you to work out.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that reggaeton was always seen as kind of like sexual, dirty, sometimes violent, although the violence was less of an issue. It was less of what was talked about. And so in that way, you know, I was like many kids who kind of listened to it on the low, right? Like I had my little CD player, my cousin would like pass me a CD. And that's how I started getting, you know, into it. Or I would listen to hip hop on the radio and my parents were still learning English. So, you know, I was able to get away with listening to like Nas and Fat Joe and Biggie and Remy Ma and with my parents like not knowing. So I do think that there was pushback about it, but it was which led me to go underground with it like many kids had to. But yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about if you've seen in your studies and also in your lived experiences, whether there is a discomfort of trying to fit into these different contexts in someone being in the reggaeton space and that context and also being cristiano and the duality of that, and whether you have any thoughts.
Yeah, so I think, you know, to be even more pointed and talk about like Daddy Yankee specifically, because I do think that Daddy Yankee is in some ways, he can be read as a test case for so many other cases, right? Don Omar, Hector el Father, et cetera, et cetera. I think that, you know, part of what I always want to ask is they have a discomfort when they are getting to a point of retirement that then makes them turn into these Christian leaders where they need to leave reggaeton behind. But what's interesting to me is that they were always engaging Christianity. So with Daddy Yankee in particular, in his early music, I was just listening to, you know, The Prophecy with him and Nas that came out in 2002, right? In that specific song, for example, he is using entire tropes that are coming directly from the Book of Revelation in order to talk about what street life is like. In his album, Barrio Fino, in 2004, he has three songs in particular that come to mind. Salud y Vida, which is the whole chorus is about like Peter denying Jesus three times before, in order to use that as a framework to talk about the egos in hip hop or in reggaeton rather. And, you know, there's multiple examples. Corazones is also building on Christian themes. And there's another one, Santifica tus escapularios, which is talking about like the scapulary, which is like a Catholic garment garb. So he is engaging Christian frameworks throughout the entirety of his career. And I think the same is true for someone like Don Omar. I mean, in the most famous song, Bandoleos, that he does with Tego, that whole song is about like le doy gracias a Dios for everything that is going on, even though I'm still a street person, right? So part of what I want to ask is two things. One, is it that he is engaging Christianity for the first time? Or is it that he's always been engaging Christianity, but because it is a type of Christianity that is more conservative, by which I mean is more engaged in a kind of purification of self, where you need to purify yourself from the evils of the world, then we don't read the earlier work that is even more justice-driven as Christian, because we've been trained to think that only the conservative form of Christianity that requires him to leave reggaeton is what is Christianity, right? So I want to ask, why is it that we think that? And I think the second thing, it doesn't surprise me that he would turn, or that any of these reggaetoneros in particularly places like Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Panama, etc., would turn to a more conservative form of Christianity, conservative theologically, that requires purity, which is often associated with Pentecostal movements, because that flavor of Christianity has had such a growth in those areas over the last 50 years, especially. So it makes sense to me that if you are turning towards a religious tradition at some point in your career, and you're within a context where the fastest growing religious movement is one that engages the world in that way, it makes sense to me that that would be where you would turn.
And what would you say to fans who are maybe skeptical of these public announcements about, like, now I'm shifting my focus, or those who think that it comes out of nowhere? Would you say, with the context that that you were mentioning, that to you it's not surprising?
To those fans, I would ask, how are we defining religion? Because if we're defining religion solely in relationship to a conservative professed belief in Christ, in this case, then we miss all the ways that people are engaging religion in everyday lives by how they frame arguments, by how they define what is right and wrong, by how they use metaphors that are religious in order to make meaning in the world. When we shift from the idea of religion is professing belief, right, in like a specific doctrine, to the ways religion is engaged in everyday life, then it's easy to see, one, that these reggaetoneros have been engaging religion the entire time of their career.
On the topic of the role of gender and gender norms in this conversation, because some of the kind of the explanations from these reggaeton artists about maybe guilt over sexually explicit lyrics and themes where women are objectified, and, you know, the presence of sexuality or hypersexuality in their music as a factor of why they're moving away from that, from the genre.
So I think part of the question is not just gender, but also age. Like, how does being a man in middle age, having spent the majority of your youth in a field that is perhaps more sexual, how does that shift as you're getting older, perhaps have kids, and perhaps have different interpretations about how that sexualizing works? But there is still a through line of, as you noted, this question of, like, even as they're getting to a point where they're asking whether or not the ways that they have sexualized people generally and women specifically is right or wrong, they're still often moving into these traditions that promote and celebrate male leadership in particular, and often use biblical justification to argue why women shouldn't be allowed to preach, right? So there's a through line even in this shift where maybe the sexualization is undermined, but there's still a huge sexualization in evangelicalism, born-again Christianity, Pentecostalism. Because even in telling women to dress in a certain way, that is still a form of sexualization, right? There's still an assumption of lack of purity that is then imposed on women and then affects how men and women interact, because of course, queer folk are not part of the conversation. And so the reason I bring that up is because even though there is a shift in how they are understanding their role as men of a certain age, there is a power dynamic that is still functioning across gender as they move into some of these traditions, where they are still celebrated as men who are able to speak and move in a particular way.
Regardless of sexually explicit lyrics, many women enjoy what they see as a liberation of women's sexuality. Nina Vasquez is a reggaeton educator who writes curriculum on Puerto Rican history for the Connecticut Historical Society. Throughout her life, she's worked to confront these contradictions.
I'm Nina. I'm originally from Puerto Rico. I moved stateside when I was 13 years old, so right entering high school. And I did a lot of, well, when I moved stateside, I noticed that Puerto Rican history, Puerto Ricanness was one frowned upon. And also there was different variations that I have never seen of Puerto Ricanness before, right? Because I lived in the island. And then when I came here, I noticed that people had their own ways of carrying that. And so that made me really interested. And in Puerto Rico, I come from a long, strong line of Puerto Rican nationalists. So I grew up around that type of politics, right?
I'm curious, do you consider your family, like your parents or other immediate family members, to be religious?
Yeah. So for me, right, I come from a very Roman Catholic household. My parents are very religious, but at the same time, I think that they have their own reservations of how they grew up in the religion. So I think they try their best to make upbringing as open-minded as possible, right? But then as a teenager and as an adult now, I realize that they're still not as open-minded as they could have been, right? But that was still very tied to the fact that everything was tied back to Catholicism, right? Like, no haga eso because, you know, tú tenemos que, you know, salvar tu alma, ¿verdad? Right? You know, making sure your soul is good. Or, you know, you have to be this particular woman, a modest woman, a woman of God, right? And things like that. Everything was always very laced in religion, right? However, though, I do have a mother that, although she was very religious in her own weird way, she was the one that was introducing me to hip hop, right? She was introducing me to hip hop. I was listening to Ja Rule when I was in elementary school. I was listening to Jay-Z, right? But I still joke around with her about it, right? Because I say, Mom, like, you introduced me to all these things and they're basically saying the same thing in English, right? But her thing was always like, en español, like, it sounds worse. Right. It sounds worse. It doesn't sound good. And also, like, you know, this is too new. Right. The generation that you're growing up with is too loose. Right. And whatever that meant, again, she always meant it in a form of like more of like sexual promiscuity and things like that. Right. And she would always be like, the hip hop that I listen to, while it's promiscuous, it's still covert.
Are there other facets to you and your, you know, your identity that you felt like you also had to hide to go underground with in the schools in terms of how you dressed?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. I was also struggling with the fact that I was bisexual. Right. And I was realizing that slowly but surely. And, you know, when you're in a religious school and you're constantly hearing all these things are bad and any form of deviance is bad and it needs to be corrected. Right. It made me feel like I constantly had to be on edge.
I'm wondering, especially since reggaeton became, like you said, like a way to connect yourself back to Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. right? And also a way that you felt like you could be freer in who you were, including your sexuality. I'm curious because reggaeton has sometimes been seen as very heterosexual in terms of how it expresses sexuality or at least interpretations of sexually explicit lyrics. If that still felt like freeing and whether... you know, despite that, or maybe that's just a narrow interpretation of that.
No, to me, reggaeton felt freeing because I could be a woman and I could be sensual. And it was okay, at least in the reggaeton world, right? No matter if it was heteronormative or what, right? To me, as a kid, as a teenager, I was focused on the fact of like, oh, I feel good. Like, I feel like a baddie, right? Like, whatever that might have felt to me, growing up, that's what the music channeled to me was like, oh my God, okay, I look good, I feel good, you know what I mean? And I'm dancing and it feels nice, right? But another part of me, right, and that's another area of struggle for me was, how do I embrace a genre that also degrades an identity that I carry, right, at times? One, that's still a question that I'm still struggling with, right, as an adult. especially when I hear certain artists and certain things that they say, right? But I actively make the choice of like, okay, I know that was like not the best lyric or not the best song, right? And that, you know, doesn't define womanhood, but also like, right, just highlighting and being conscious of like what I listen to is one way that I've learned how to deal with it. But the other thing that I have to say is like, one thing that reggaeton throughout, even if people describe it as misogyny, I always ask, like, why are we picking on reggaeton specifically when it comes to that theme, right? And because why don't we talk about salsa? Why don't we talk about merengue? Why don't we talk about bachata, right? A lot of these genres talk about doing domestic violence on women, right? Everybody always looks at reggaeton.
Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of it has to do with, again, religion, especially in Puerto Rico. I think a lot about Mano Dura, and I think a lot about the anti-pornography campaign, because as much as people say that Mano Dura and anti-pornography campaign was really based and embedded in policy and in the search for law and order, when we really look at like the policy and the things that are being punished and corrected, is very much a base of morality and modesty.
I wanted to go back to the role of gender and, you know, given that virtually all the reggaeton artists, like we're talking about who had made these public announcements or who had not just made the announcements, but had shifted to devote themselves to Christianity, that all of them are men. Is there a reason why in your study of reggaeton, like, or in your study of this happening, in your analysis, is there a reason why it's men going through this shift and not reggaetoneras?
The way that sexuality is expressed is different, right? I think that maybe at times, I don't want to give the full benefit of the doubt to men, but I'm saying like men probably realize how rough their lyrics can be and how problematic their life can be, right, with the lyrics that they share when in comparison to women artists who, when they write their lyrics, to them it's like, oh, I'm empowering us and the girls. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different take on femininity. It's a different take on sexuality. It's a different take on music, right? Because it's a completely different view, right? It's more, I think, when we think about, like, Ivy Queen and we think about, like, Karol G, I think of, like, that music of, like, es reggaeton para las nenas, right? And they're aware, I don't think they feel any sort or source of guilt, right? Or shame, because they know that what they're doing is for empowerment.
Ultimately, many scholars chalk up any shock or skepticism following Daddy Yankee's announcements of public misunderstandings of the man, the faith, and the machine. What changed for Daddy Yankee wasn't a sudden pivot to Christianity. Instead, Juan says it was a choice to publicly reckon with no longer seeing the flavor of Christianity he's engaged in as compatible with reggaeton. According to Huang, the artists are on their personal journey. What's at stake is how are people navigating, negotiating, and pushing against colonial imposition and seeking liberation? Religious communities are one way that people do that in complex and nuanced ways that are often messy. Reggaeton is another. That's all for today. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting us as we do our best to support our community. We couldn't do it without you. For more stories like this, make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at epicenter-nyc.com. Our intro music is All the Pretty Horses by Caravica. You can find more of their music on their website, linked to in our podcast description.